Welcome to another episode of the Functional Nerds, but this one is not like the other ones. My name is Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And tonight, John Nelio is off fighting crime in another part of the galaxy. There was an uprising on the planet Ung, and as a Green Lantern, he did have to go off and... I just realized you guys probably didn't know he was a Green Lantern. So forget all that. Forget all that. He's just not here tonight. And so we needed someone to come in and help us. And so we invited someone into the super secret underground Functional Nerds broadcast booth. And that's Jame Gates, who is a PR manager, a freelance editor, and all kinds of other stuff. What do you do, Jame?
Well, for one thing, you forgot to tell me when you invited me into this super secret lair that you had to kill me if I knew where it was. So I don't appreciate that. But I'm a publicist for Raw Dog Screaming Press. I've edited a couple of anthologies, one of which is of zombie erotica. So I get introduced in various ways and embarrassed in coffee shops quite often. I also write when I have a chance, and I'm the publicist for a fetish entertainment group, as well as many, many other things, most of which I forget and have to go back and edit my bio every time I remember something that I'm doing.
Wow. That sounds like fun.
It is.
So,
when I remember what I'm doing.
Rigor Mortis is the anthology you were talking about, right?
Yes.
So when is Rigor Mortis 2, the steampunk trilogy, coming out?
You've been talking to Kaylin, haven't you? It is not coming out, and you are welcome to tell him yet again, but I have said so, because we had this conversation just last week in San Francisco, over Thai food, in fact.
What about Rigor Mortis 2, Electric Boogaloo?
That's just disturbing. I've been through one zombie erotica pile. I don't ever need to have quite such a literal understanding of the term slush pile ever again.
How about Mary Shelley's Rigor Mortis?
Actually, we did have someone suggest a Frankenstein Rigor Mortis sort of thing. And we thought about that for a few minutes, and no. I'm sorry.
Okay, so while John was off doing other things tonight, we sat down with Ari Marmel, correct? Did I say that right?
Ari.
Dang it. Ari Marmel. So let's get to that interview, and that was a good time, and everybody should take a listen. Here we go. And tonight we are joined by, and I'm already going to mess it up, I know, Ari Marmel. Did I get the last name right, Marmel?
Yes.
Awesome. And of course, Jame Gates is here with me.
Yes.
And she has nothing else to say. So,
Ari. You're doing very well on your own.
I'm so flustered. So you're an author.
I try to be.
You've written a lot of books.
Yeah.
You've written a lot of short stories.
Yes.
You've worked on some role-playing games.
About 5,000 of them.
You've got the blog. We talk a little bit about some stuff. I want to go through all this stuff. Let's start with the role-playing games, because I'm an old ex role-playing game nerd. What are some of the titles that you've worked on?
Oh, wow. well, I started about 10 years ago with some books for Vampire the Masquerade.
Wasn't that a Fox TV show?
Fox made a TV show based off of it loosely. The primary difference being that the game was good.
That describes pretty much everything they do, doesn't it? It's kind of an inevitability.
But yeah, I did a number of books for Vampire, a few of the other World of Darkness games. Went from there to working on Dungeons & Dragons 3rd and 4th edition. Some of the more recent books, I worked on the 4th edition Tomb of Horrors, Plane Above, Plane Below, the two Eberron Core books, the Dark Sun creature catalog, a whole bunch of others, but that's kind of the recent.
What edition of Dungeons & Dragons is the old reddish-orange book?
If that's the one I'm thinking of, that's basic Dungeons & Dragons,
right.
Which isn't in one of the numbered editions.
Okay.
It was kind of parallel to first edition.
Because I have those. I have the orange-red one, I have the black one, and I have the silver one from like 88, 87, something like that. And then I have the ones from the 70s that are the little pamphlet-sized books.
Ah, yes.
I think those are the originals. Those were from the early 70s or mid-70s or something like that.
Yeah, 74, I think, was the first year.
Yeek. Yeek. Anyway, I kind of skipped over the part where, why don't you tell people who you are? What do you do?
Oh,
who's Ari when he's not writing?
Asleep. No, writing is pretty much what I do. It's full time for me these days, which I'm capable of mostly because my wife works. I've been writing since college. I got a degree in creative writing because I realized in about my sophomore year that A, it's what I really wanted to do, and B, I suck at everything else.
So did you get a degree in creative writing and then go into sales for like 2 years and then?
No, not sales, but I did a number of retail jobs, and I worked as a proofreader at an ad agency for about a year and a half, which was kind of sad because despite the fact that I'm a writer, spelling is not my strong suit. I tend to tell people that the most creative part of my writing is, in fact, my spelling.
Oh, boy.
So, that's what spell check is for.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm a tech guy. If there's no spell check, you know, it's like the first thing I do when I install a fresh copy of Adobe Creative Suite is I go into InDesign and I go through all the little things and turn on the damn spell check because it's not automatic. I hate that.
See, I have changed computers, so I lose my custom dictionary and I'll put in one of my manuscripts and it'll sit for a few minutes and it'll tell me, Word can't finish checking this document. There's too many errors.
You know, that actually makes me wonder. I'm surprised that no one has put together a custom dictionary for Word for science fiction and fantasy authors that they can just plug in.
They should.
They should.
Put that on Twitter. Someone will pick it up and do it.
Yeah. That would be awesome. So you get the degree in creative writing. You do some odd jobs.
Yes.
Then you decide, you know what, this is not what I want to do. I want to be a writer. Do you start with short stories or novels?
It actually didn't quite happen in that order. I was writing even while I was doing the odd jobs. I just wasn't successfully publishing anywhere.
Gotcha.
I did short stories in college, but my first big post-college writing projects were a couple of novels, more than a couple. The first three of which I gently call learning experiences, and nobody will ever hear of again.
They're still in the trunk.
Yeah. Actually, at this point, they only exist on floppy disks, so nobody can read them.
Actually, I have an old Toshiba that might be able to read them.
Yeah, over my dead body.
Careful, we might take that as a challenge.
A few of the early novels were salvageable enough that I've rewritten them more recently. But my first published work was actually my first work for the vampire role-playing game. What happened was when I was working at the ad agency, I'd written a couple of novels, had no luck publishing them because at the time they sucked. but I'd had an idea for a couple of years now, well, a couple of years then, for a vampire supplement that was inspired by my honeymoon in New Orleans. Inspired by the New Orleans part, not the honeymoon part, just for the record.
What is it about New Orleans? What is it about Nolens that inspires people to write vampire stories?
Have you ever been?
I have been near, but not to.
I've been through the airport.
Go take the the haunted and cemetery tours and then come back and ask me that question.
Oh yeah, see. I'm not a cemetery guy. I have been to many different the only time I go to where my mom grew up in Paducah, Kentucky is when somebody dies. So it's kind of a very depressing trip for me. Because I have to go to, you know, it's like my mom gets all excited. Oh, we're going to Paducah. Yeah, for a funeral. But she's excited because that's where she was born and that's where she grew up, you know, and all the family's kind of getting together again. Me, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to see a hotel and a funeral home and then this old creepy graveyard that I don't really want to go to because the first time I went there, I was probably 8 years old and it gave me nightmares. You know, because it's very much probably what you're talking about with like the New Orleans kind of tours, where it's these old Gothic tombstones, and you know it's just it just feels very heavy when you go there.
With New Orleans, it's not even tombstones; it's all the above ground burials, so it's the mausoleums and the crypts and whatnot.
Right, because of flooding and the water table.
Right. I actually wrote. Given that I was working a very boring job and I had a lot of free time during the day, I actually wrote an entire supplement for the game. It wasn't even just a few chapters. It was an entire book's worth.
Wow.
And submitted it, and they couldn't use it. But the guy in charge of the game at the time, a fellow by the name of Justin Achille, liked the writing and said, hey, he can obviously finish an assignment. So he gave me a freelance job after that, and that's where it started. This was back in, dear God, 2000.
And how many novels have come since?
Novels? It's, let's see.
Eight.
Well, I'm trying to think of which ones I've wrote. Gee, it's a good thing I don't use English for my living. Which ones I've written since then and which ones I salvaged from before then. But, yeah, actually, I probably have written about eight since then. They haven't all seen publication, but I've written somewhere in the 8 to 10 range.
Nice. And all over the place? Are they published in America, outside of America?
The ones that have been published so far are available. They were published here first. The Conqueror's Shadow is available in UK markets. It will be in France and Germany, but hasn't appeared yet.
So, before you go down that list, let's talk about that for a little bit. So you have, people have to create these names that I can't pronounce. Corvus Rebane?
Yes.
So you have the Corvus Rebane novels, and there's two of those, correct?
Yes.
And that's one universe. What about the other novels like Agents of Artifice, Black Crusade? Is that another universe or the same universe?
Agents of Artifice was a tie-in novel for the game Magic: The Gathering.
Ooh.
So that was very specifically their universe.
I ought to tap that. That's a Magic: The Gathering joke. That's a Magic: The Gathering joke.
Well, since you opened that door, I'll throw in a plug and point out that the book was written to be a jumping-on point for new readers as well as appealing to old fans. Unquote.
See, so, I never actually got into the role-playing aspect of Magic: The Gathering. For my friends and I, it was just, let's see who could build the best, coolest deck with the most coolest stuff in there, and then just obliterate each other in chaos magic.
Oh, well, sure. And that's the way most people play it. But yeah. They have the novels for the people who actually want the story behind it. That was obviously their universe, their property.
What about Black Crusade?
Black Crusade was also a tie-in. One of the settings for Dungeons & Dragons was called Ravenloft. It was sort of a gothic horror setting.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that was some years ago. When I wrote Black Crusade, they were trying to do a new line of Ravenloft fiction that was hopefully going to have a broader appeal. The idea was, rather than drawing characters and settings from the different D&D worlds, they were going to draw them from different periods of Earth history. But still tie them into the Ravenloft setting itself, which I thought was a great idea, except that the line got canceled, which is why Black got printed and is only available online.
Yeah, don't you hate it when that happens?
Well, I could be even more bitter and point out that Black Crusade was supposed to be the first one printed and would have seen print, but they delayed it because they wanted Agents of Artifice to come out first.
That sucks. But
I'm not bitter about that. I have much bigger and more recent things to be bitter about.
Okay, so let's talk about Corvus Urbane then. So you've got two books in that series.
Yes.
Is there a third one coming out, or?
I have.
Do you have a plan? Is there a plan in your mind? I'm going to do five.
the original plan, when I first wrote the book, The Conqueror's Shadow, which is one of the ones I wrote some time ago and then rewrote when I stopped sucking. The plan had been to just do the one originally, but I had an idea for the sequel, and Random House wanted a sequel, so we did that. I wrote Warlord's Legacy so we can end here if we choose to, but I can go back and do more. I have ideas for more books in the series if we want to do that.
So what's the pitch here? What's the world? What's the universe? What's the character? What's going on?
Answer us.
Was there actually any punctuation at all in there?
You know what? I get blasted all the time for too many commas. So
he will never again use them in speech.
Okay.
Happened once John doesn't show up, just so people understand.
John supplies the punctuation. Got it.
John provides the stability and the direction. Otherwise, you are slaves to my ADD brain.
And I'm no help. I just instigate.
Well, I knew that.
So back to the pitch.
The pitch behind it, the idea that first came to me was simply to take your very typical fantasy evil warlord, you know, the big dark armor, the armies of monsters and all that, and then see what's happened to him after he's retired.
do many of them retire?
Well, I don't know if many of them do, but this one did. The idea behind Corvus is that he made a concerted effort at conquest 17 years before the bulk of the book takes place. And pretty much on the edge of victory, he gave up for reasons that are revealed throughout the book, but nobody outside of his inner circle knew at the time. 17 years later, he's retired. He's married to somebody who was actually a former hostage that they fell in love with each other. They have kids. And
there's a name for that. There's a syndrome.
Yeah, I made sure that it was very clear it wasn't a one-sided thing. I like that. But yes, I've had that thought. The idea is 17 years later, he's old, he's retired, and somebody else has shown up, picking up where he left off, using his plans, his tactics that nobody should have.
Mm.
And it's pretty much, it's not a story of redemption. I mean, he's not a good guy. He's just trying to stop somebody who's even worse.
He's very much
an anti-hero.
Did he have his plans up on the internet?
Well, see, now you've spoiled the ending.
I was just curious.
Yeah.
He wrote something down somewhere.
No, it's all explained.
Okay.
In the book.
So
there are no plot holes whatsoever. I personally guarantee that, or none of your money back.
Gotcha. So that's the first one. So then the second one comes along, which is The Warlord's Legacy.
Yes. And I don't want to get too heavily into that one because you don't have to go too far into that book before you start hitting spoilers, and certainly spoilers for the first book.
Ah, gotcha.
But what I will say is it's 6 years after the first book. The ending of what happens at the end of the first book has not gone the way Corvus anticipated. The kingdom is caught in a war of aggression with its neighboring kingdom. And somebody who is not Corvus has reappeared in Corvus's traditional black armor, so everybody assumes it's him, and is massacring nobles and guildmasters across the country.
Ugh. Hate it when that happens.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a pet peeve.
In other words, everything's just gone to hell.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like Bucky showing up dressed up as Captain America. It just does not work for me.
But
oddly enough, though, Dick Grayson in the Cape and Cowl, perfectly fine with that.
Well, I think it's because he wasn't dead.
Right.
Yeah, dead people coming back and all that stuff, it just tends to cause problems. I don't know why. You'd really think I'd be used to it.
But, yeah, no, it's very much, and I like to make this distinction, it's a sequel, but it's not part two, by which I mean the first one does not end on a cliffhanger. It stands alone by itself. You pick up the first one. I certainly hope you want to read the second one, but you're not going to be left hanging if you don't. They were written to stand apart.
Understood. So that's Corvus. Then you've got your tie-in novels. So I like to ask people who do tie-in novels, I mean, how was that experience for you? Because, you know, you hear from some people that, oh my gosh, you know, it was kind of draconian and the rules, Star Wars. And other people say, oh my gosh, you know, it was just so much fun. And, you know, we did so many cool things. So, you know, what was your experience like doing the tie-in novels?
I'm going to say that's not an either or proposition. I had a great deal of fun with it. I liked how the final book came out. But at the same time, there was also a great deal of there was a great deal of material I had to learn. There were certain restrictions that I would have liked to have gone a different way on. It was the first book of not of the Magic Tie-In, but of this subset of Magic Tie-In called the Planeswalker series. So there was a lot of there were decisions still being made on the management level. So, and I mean this with you know, no offense to any individual person. I liked everybody I worked with, but there was a lot of group input that kind of made things complicated.
Hmm.
That being said, the experience overall, it turned out a very good book. It's well, I think so.
Cool. So you also have short stories.
Yes.
Where are you publishing? Where are these? I mean,
well,
usual places, Blackgate, you know,
I have
Realms of Fantasy.
I have something on submission to Blackgate right now, which I have not yet gotten an answer on. So, guys, if you're listening,
do you want Jim to call him?
I can call John and threaten him. I mean,
I think maybe I'll send an email with your name in it, and he'll respond out of fear. most of my short stories have so far been published. As tie-in material again.
I'm sorry. I just had a vision of, like, the guys at Blackgate getting this box, and they open it up, and inside is Rigor Mortis, and they're like, no, not again.
I can point out, they actually have Rigor Mortis, and they have been wonderfully supportive ever since they met me at Dragon Con last year. And Bill Ward has a copy of Rigor Mortis. John O'Neill has looked through it. He did not die of horror. Howard Jones got kind of this look on his face like, I don't really know what to do with this, but that's very nice. So they've had it. They've not died. And that really is not that much of a threat for them. They're tougher men than that.
I'm sorry. Anyway, I interrupted you.
But what was I saying?
We were talking about short stories.
Tie-in. I've done tie-in short stories for Dungeons & Dragons that were published in mostly online. Although there's been a couple of anthologies.
There's been a lot of shakeups at Wizards of the Coast, though.
There have, and I couldn't begin to tell you what the deal is. I don't have insight into the inner workings, and would be, even if I did, if I spilled them, I would be killed.
Oh, no. I wasn't asking you to.
Sure. But
I'm just saying there's been some upheaval, and I think the magazine's gone now.
It's online now.
It's all online. Okay.
Yeah. But I have, I've got a short story coming out in an upcoming anthology called Human Tales, edited by Jennifer Brozek, which is actually my first non-tie-in short story sale.
Nice. Congratulations.
Oddly enough, I've had more luck selling novels than short stories. I'm not sure how many people can say that. So yeah, they're out there. I have several on or linked from my webpage that are free. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Well, and we'll give the website here at the end. So the other one I wanted to ask you about was the Goblin Corps.
Yes. Goblin Core is coming out in July through Pyre Books. It's
who? What? Who? Who?
That's Pyre Books. P-Y-R.
It's books. Familiar, but I can't place it.
Yeah.
I think we need you to say it a few more times just to be sure.
Pyre Books. Pyre Books. Pyre. Edited by Lou Anders.
Oh, that guy. Gotcha.
I talk about Corvus Verbane being an anti-hero. The characters of the Goblin Corps aren't anti-heroes. They are out-and-out villains. this is a book that it postulates your very traditional, very Tolkien-esque, very D&D-esque fantasy setting. And it takes the idea of your standard epic fantasy and it turns it around. It's, what are the villains doing all this time? It follows a group of goblins, orc, ogre, kobold, that sort of thing, as they are basically struggling to save the evil kingdom from the amassed armies of good. It's
that's awesome.
It's extremely bloody.
For the horde.
Yeah. Well, you know. Okay, I have to tell a quick story now. The first draft of this novel was written years ago. It again has been massively rewritten, but it was written before World of Warcraft got big, and I was originally calling the villain in this book the Lich King. And World of Warcraft came out, and I said, you know, I don't think I can call him that anymore. Because no matter how much I argue that my book was written first, I think a book about a bunch of goblinoid creatures serving a creature called the Lich King, no one's going to give me the benefit of the doubt on that.
Hmm. Well, now the in your defense, in World of Warcraft, goblins are neutral.
Yes, but...
They are. They're neutral.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm not arguing.
hey, you know, I used to spend all my time in Booty Bay.
In what bay?
Booty Bay. It's a goblin-controlled city.
Sure, it is.
That's the adult-only section of World of Warcraft.
That's where you go because you go to Stranglethorn, and that's where you hunt all your animals and you skin them and you use the skins to make stuff and sell it on the auction house.
Gotcha.
Come on.
But
get your minds out of my gutter.
It's
this is me you're talking to. Remember. Sorry, Ari.
Okay.
Are you still happy you came on and talked to us?
Ask me later.
Well, but, he did express concern that I was in on this. So,
so you wrote the book prior, and then World of Warcraft hit, and the
so
Lich
I,
King.
I changed some names, but thankfully, most of the other details were not too similar. What I'm saying is, it's very bloody. It's extremely profane. It's incredibly sarcastic. One of my prior agents, and it's sad that I can say I've had multiple prior agents, but
it happens.
They keep leaving the industry. but one of my prior agents described it as Lord of the Rings meets Inglourious Bastards.
There is nothing that is not epically awesome about that description, just so you know.
So yeah, no, I'm looking forward to the reactions to this one. I don't think it's I don't think even people who have read my previous stuff are going to be quite prepared for this one.
And when is that hitting bookshelves?
Late July.
Late July. Okay. So that really does sound awesome, by the way. I mean, that's a great concept. I want to say that sounds very original to me. I don't think I've heard that before.
Oh, well, thank you. And I then won't point out anything similar.
Jame, you had a question.
I did.
Dang it.
You're doing quite fine on your own. Feel free to keep on.
So, okay. So just let me, you got the tie-ins, you've got the novels, the original. Now you never did answer the question. You kind of did. You said that in the Corvus Verbane, that you've got the two, and the second one kind of wraps it up if you want it to be wrapped up. But I mean, in your own heart, you know how many of those books you want to do, right? I mean, you know whether or not you want to revisit that series.
Yes. I know that I would at the very least. There's a story that I kind of allude to in just a couple of lines in the second book about something that took place between the two books. I'd very much like to go in and do that. Beyond that, I have ideas for what I guess would amount to a second trilogy. I don't want to really call it that because it's not divided that way, but a second group of three.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to do it. I think there's some cool ideas, and I love the characters. By the same token, if the opportunity does not come up, I'm happy going on to other stuff as well.
So,
there could be as many as six, but I wouldn't.
You could live without them.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do them. I really don't want to give the wrong impression. But I think if the story were to wrap up with these two, or with the first three, it would be satisfying.
Gotcha. So that's Del Rey Spectra?
Yes.
So do they have first right of refusal on like a third if you decide to write it?
Oh, well, I would certainly go to them first if I wanted to do a third book in that series. I'm not convinced anybody else would do it, just because there's all kinds of weirdness with one publisher printing a book in a series that another publisher started, and nobody likes doing that.
But you could do it yourself. I mean, you could.
Oh, sure.
You could go straight to Amazon.
Yeah, I could. I could probably. You know, I could sell dozens of copies that way.
Well, it depends. I mean, an established series with a fan base that's already invested in the series and the characters might go for a third straight to ebook.
Oh, sure, sure.
So that kind of leads me to a question I like to ask authors. You know, I mean, what are you feeling about the ebooks and how they're changing the industry?
I like ebooks as a concept. I got a Kindle a few months ago, and I'm a convert. I love reading on it. How it's changing the industry? You ask 20 different people in the industry how it's changing the industry, and you're going to get at least 20 different answers.
I've had established authors tell me it's going to replace the mass market paperback completely. You're not going to see those in print anymore. And it's going to really hurt the mid-list author.
I think it could go that way, but I don't think it's necessarily going to go that way. Things are still shaking out. We're still seeing how far, how far the market penetration goes, market acceptance goes of the e-readers. The trick is going to be that since you don't need a publisher to e-publish, I think the real question is going to be how well people in the market adapt to separating the wheat from the chaff. And I don't just mean established writers are automatically better, but I mean when anybody can publish, there's going to be some great stuff.
Yeah.
Whether or not it would have been published under a traditional publisher, and a whole bunch of not so great stuff.
Direct quote from Cat Valente: everybody get ready to read the slush pile.
Yes. So I don't know. I think it could. I think it could, depending on how it goes, it could hurt aspects of publishing, but it could also save the industry. I'm just my crystal ball is giving me an answer and clear try again later.
Okay. So last question I want to really bother you with. Talk about Babel Clash.
Ah. Okay. Ah,
and Sam Sykes.
Well, for those who don't know, Babel Clash is a series of columns on the Borders blog. They ask two authors to come in and essentially just debate whatever topics of writing or fiction or geekery come to mind. The ones that tend to be more hostile tend to be the more fun.
You think?
Which is why Sam and I have been pounding on each other.
Sam pounds on everybody. Love him. He's a great guy. You meet him in person. He's very nice. But boy, does he like to pick fights.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. But, you know, and I hate to ruin the illusion for the readers, but Sam and I actually get along just fine. in fact, up with topics because, honestly, we agree on much more than we disagree. So I hope it's an amusing exchange. I'd love people to go read it, but there's no real hostility there.
And what's the topic?
Oh, well, we started. Wow, this is embarrassing. What the hell did we start with?
Sam Sykes, Babel Clash, all that good stuff.
I'm trying to remember what our first topics were. It's been a really hectic couple of weeks.
Let's see. I'm looking at the first one here. Let's see. Whoa, boy, I promise you, Sam, the many reactions. I don't know. Where is your... Do you actually start with a topic here? Let's see.
Well, this is just kind of sad.
It is.
Proof that writers do not actually need a subject to go on at length.
Hold on. I have
the memory of something that I forgot about. Oh, right. We started off talking about epic series versus standalone books.
Yeah, there you go. Epic series versus standalone. I found that too just now. Uh-huh.
And no, the contention was that Sam was arguing on behalf of the epic series. I prefer books that are either standalone books or what I call episodic series. Which is where the series goes on, and you might have the same characters, and you might have a few ongoing plot lines, but for the most part, each book can be read on its own.
The Dresden Files.
At least the early Dresden Files. They kind of begin getting a little more length later on.
Have you read Changes?
I have not yet.
Oh.
But yeah, that's an example. Stephen Bruce's Vlad Taltosh books. Mm-hmm. Conqueror Shadow and Warlord's Legacy. Cough, cough.
Gail Carriger.
I'm sorry?
Gail Carriger.
I don't know. Those seem fairly dependent on each other from what I've read. At least for me.
Okay.
but yeah, books like that.
Oh, Wheel of Time. Yeah, there you go.
I really would call that one of the more epic ongoing single story series.
You know, the Wheel of Time kind of reminds me a little bit of Warner Brothers doing the Harry Potter movies. We only have one book left, but let's see if we can split it into four movies.
But so the topic began there. We sort of segued from there into whether or not and how to use classic fantasy tropes in fantasy. You know, is there still room for the traditional elves and dwarves and dragons, or are those over? You know, that kind of thing.
And how much longer are you guys on Babel Clash?
The rest of this week, and then we wrap things up on Monday.
Okay. Well, it's been very interesting and very entertaining, so I just want to throw that out there for you.
Well, thank you.
So we should probably get this, you know, kind of wrapped up. Why don't you tell people, your website, you know, where they can find you online, your Twitter, your home address, any of that kind of stuff that you feel like sharing.
Your phone number, you know, what time you sleep at night.
Bank account, PIN number.
A little bit about that short story you have coming out in 20 spec.
You know, I probably should have mentioned that, shouldn't I?
I was being really good at not saying anything.
Why don't you lead with that?
I told you this has been a very hectic week. I'm sorry.
I know.
But yes, one of the other short stories that I recently sold is coming out in a book that somebody edited. I forget her name.
I have no idea who it is.
No.
Erica Holt.
There you go. And for those readers who don't actually know what I'm talking about, Jane was the editor on that. This is a book of... I say, what is that, like, mostly but not entirely urban fantasy?
It's 1920s-based speculative fiction. So it's kind of a mix. Okay. Mostly urban fantasy.
My particular story is called The Purloined Ledger, named after the similar Poe story.
Say that again, because you kind of broke up.
Oh, The Purloined Ledger. With the name came from the Edgar Allan Poe story, The Purloined Letter. It's a story about a Chicago PI, because you always have to have those, who also happens to be an exile from the Seelie Court of the Fae. This is a character that I'm actually planning to use elsewhere. In fact, I don't want to jinx it, but I'm currently trying to sell a novel that stars him.
Awesome.
But yeah, this is coming out in an anthology, which I believe is officially called Broken Time Blues now. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that is coming out, ...
in August at Worldcon.
Okay.
Is it going to give anybody nightmares?
Amanda Davis has a story in there that very well might. Hmm. Most of them are not horror. Yeah, I don't think that the collection really will. One or two stories might lead that way.
Okay. And so you've got that. And then website, Twitter, all that good stuff?
Okay. Website and Twitter. My website is www.mouseferatu.com. That's MOUSEFERATU. It's
if you had done it a different way, I would have cried. If you would have went, and that's MOUSE.
Yeah, no, I wasn't going to do that. I don't hate
we'll
you.
We'll do it for you.
Yeah. No, it's a joke that goes back to my days on the forums for the White Wolf role playing games. But if people don't remember,
I want to suck your cheese.
Yes, basically. But you can also get to the same website by just doing remarmel.com.
Okay. With two L's.
Yes, two L's. Next to each other even. Mm-hmm. And my Twitter is also Mouseferatu. So is my LiveJournal. Pretty much anywhere.
Do you still use LiveJournal? I know LiveJournal, some people like it just because you can lock certain posts.
Yeah. At this point, I mostly just copy my blog entries from my own site over to it.
Gotcha.
But I still occasionally, if I want to vent about something that only certain people can see, talk about my editors behind their back. Oh, wait, that was my inside voice.
Okay. Well, any conventions or appearances or signings or anything coming up?
Well, if anybody's local to Austin, I'm doing a signing at Dragon's Lair on April 6th.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be at World Horror, not as a guest, just an attendee.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'll steal a corner table and sign something there.
There you go.
And I will be at Comic Palooza in Houston at the end of May, doing signings and panels.
No, I think John DiNardo is doing a panel there.
Okay. And
he's
from
SF Signal.
Ah, right. Okay. I knew the name. It wasn't connecting. And I'm hoping to do Dragon Con, but we'll see if the wallet allows for that.
Understood. Well, we appreciate you coming on tonight. This has been a lot of fun. Hopefully you haven't been scarred for life.
No. Maybe blithering like an idiot, but not scarred.
No, not at all. If anybody's blithering like an idiot, believe me, it's me.
We have equal shares in that.
There's plenty of idiocy to share.
There's no shortage of it.
All right. Well, again, I want to thank you. Everybody should go and check out your different books. Look for that upcoming Goblin Core, because that sounds really cool. Look for Broken Time Blues when that comes out. And when is that again, Shane?
That is in August. From Absolute Express, which is a branch of Edge, which is in Canada.
All right. Well, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we're back. That was our interview. That was awesome. He was a good interview.
Yes, definitely. Although I think we might have traumatized him a little bit.
Slightly. And I did tell John when he said, I'm asking Jame to sit in for me. I'm like, have you ever seen what happens when Jame and I start chatting on Twitter? I said, it's not pretty.
Well, apparently he didn't care if the institution was still standing by the time he got back.
See, and I also pointed out that the problem really isn't you and I. We're innocent. It's all Charles A. Tan.
It is, and he will never see that, but he instigates everything.
Instigator. That was my word.
And he blames us.
Yes. Instigator.
And see, by this mere invitation of my presence to the Functional Nerds podcast, I think we can agree that we have tacit approval from John to do whatever we want to do.
Which is kind of funny because, there was just a couple, 2-3 weeks ago where I tried to do the whole beginning of the podcast where I say hello and welcome to the Functional Nerds. I tried to do the whole thing in Spanish.
Oh dear.
And I don't speak Spanish, and so it was not good, and John like he put the kibosh on. He's like, no, Patrick, no. Patrick,
if you do it in,
we're not
you
doing
should do
that.
It in Klingon.
I can't do Klingon. I don't know Klingon. I'm not that nerd.
I'm sure we could find someone.
We probably could. And I even suggested, you know, like having Fabio Mendez or somebody like really, really translate everything for me and do it phonetically so I could say it. You would think that a boy that grew up in Fresno, California would speak Spanish, but no, I took Latin.
Yeah, I don't speak it either, and I grew up in Northern California, so. And my mom is even friends with Mexican mafia guys, and she spoke Spanish as a second language and all that good stuff, and none of it rubbed off.
Mm. And I grew up with Mexican step-grandparents.
Okay,
and I still didn't do it.
That's actually far worse than mine.
I had menudo for Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, you're a lost cause. You don't just go commit ritual suicide now.
It's terrible. So hopefully everybody's going to go check out Ari stuff. I keep wanting to say Ari, and it's.
Like, I know, I do too, and I usually pronounce A's ah. So
I'm terrible. I'm terrible. So let's talk about a couple of things. What have you got going on right now, Jane? Before I get into like functional nerd stuff.
Well, I'm getting ready to move back to California to work on some super secret plans there.
You couldn't pay me enough money to move back to California.
See, I don't understand. Well, you grew up in Fresno. Never mind.
The only place worse would be if I'd said, you know, I grew up in Bakersfield.
Yes.
Yeah, or Stockton.
Yeah, Stockton especially. Yeah. I drove through Stockton a few times, and that was scarring enough. But I had family in Visalia and everywhere else, so I completely understand, actually, what, after thinking about it, why you don't want to move back.
Yeah, see, I lived in the central San Joaquin Valley, so, you know, very, very hot, 115-degree summers.
Yes.
It's agricultural, you know, lots and lots of farms and stuff, which are dying right now, which is sad because they've turned the water off. It's just, you know, taxes are really high. Unemployment is super high. It's just bad. Bad.
Well,
there.
That used to be cattle ranches. My great grandfather, was a cattle rancher, and he transitioned to oranges because the premiums for such things, the prices were so much better than for cattle.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of came back and bit everyone when the water suddenly just wasn't there as much.
Suddenly I have that song, The Streets of Bakersfield, in my head.
Thankfully, I don't know that. And if you share that with me, we will cease to be on speak terms. Just a word of warning.
So you're planning to move back there. Rigor mortis, how's that doing? Is that still
That's
huge?
That's doing well. We're getting ready to re-release that, actually. So
you had some good stiff sales there?
Yes, very stiff. One could almost say, you know, coming back to life of a form. I'm
so
shameless.
So you got that going. What else you got going on?
We're in the final stages of the Broken Time Blues, which actually Ari Marmel is part of, as he mentioned.
Awesome.
That will be coming out at Worldcon in Reno. Also in Reno, Erica Holt and I will have... the currently untitled, due to discussions as to titles, which have been eluding us recently, a reprint anthology from Raw Dog Screaming Press with a couple of news stories in it, just kind of showcasing some of the bizarro and weird fiction that's going on right now.
Hmm.
So that doesn't have a name, but it will also be debuting, so one assumes that we will come up with a suitable title fairly soon.
You can do what I do. When you have problems with names, just call it like the super awesome something or other.
You know, we brought that up and she just kind of, the publisher didn't really like that. Ugh. She thought it was a little too obvious. You know, that we needed to be more subtle in how awesome we were. Yeah. I don't understand it, but you know.
I don't do subtle. I do bright rainbow colors. Super awesome unnamed comic.
That's the only way to do it.
Heck yeah, especially when someone's going, I'm going to sue you.
Yeah, well, you know. Someone's always saying that anyway, so you might as well have fun with it. But yeah, that, and then I keep thinking that I'm actually going to do some writing, but that recently has been swallowed up in getting involved with doing the publicity for Jeff Vandermeer's wonderful, wonderful nonfiction collection, Monstrous Creatures. Really, if you're a fan of the fantasy science fiction world, and you want to understand a little bit more about some of the inner workings of it and what it actually contributes to literature and everything else, it's a Monstrous Creatures is a collection of essays, reviews, and interviews, among other things, from Jeff's many and varied sources of blogging.
Very cool.
Yeah. So that is something worth checking out. I've had a ton of fun working on that.
So where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter. I'm at Jayme Gates. And then...
And that's J-A-Y-M.
Yes. G-A-T-E-S. And contrary to the occasional popular opinion, I am not a man. I do get many emails addressed, Dear Sir, and I have people address me this way in person, too. So, just for the curious, I am, in fact, a woman. just because that's been an issue recently.
Wow.
But
Is that from people, like, sending you submissions?
That's actually from one of my cover artists.
Really? That's interesting.
For cross genres and other things. It's very amusing to me.
Never ever to all the people out there, all the artists, all the writers, whenever you're sending something, especially to an editor or to a literary agent, never ever assume, you know, don't put Mr. You do your research, figure out who this person is and address the email or the letter or whatever they want
to their first name
to them and make sure that you do it the way they want you to. Look at their submission guidelines. You know, if they say we only want an email, we do not accept anything with an attachment, dumbass, don't put a PDF on there.
And do not do it in purple font or in, say, 78.3
font. They can't really want single space Times New Roman 12.
No, that's too easy.
I like Comic Sans.
As a last resort, you can always address your email to Dear People, and we will probably get a really good laugh out of it.
So anyway, Jayme Gates on Twitter.
And then I don't actually keep up with my personal blogs, so I am blogging for the Ink Punks, which is a wonderful group. Christy Yant, Wendy Wagner, a couple of other wonderful people, like my co-editor, Erica. I could go on. And then I'm also going to be starting to blog for the Sword and Sorcery Heroic Adventure something or other. Sorry. Site Rogue Blades Entertainment. Basically, things in the style of David Gemmell and Michael Moorcock. All of the slightly pulp sort of stuff. We're going to be blogging about some of the early influences and what's going on in popular media today, among other things. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Okay, so let me get some functional nerd stuff out of the way here. This has kind of been a long podcast, and I appreciate people who are still listening. Functionalnerds.com, we have Paul Weimer, I'm going to say. It could be Weimer. Has written a review of The Alchemist in Shadows, which is a new book out by Pierre Pevel, which could also be Pevel. and that is, I believe, a Pyre book. Gosh, go figure. And that's on The Functional Nerd, so go check that out. He seemed to like that book. I have a short story out on atfmb.com that's an untitled short story because, just like James, sometimes I have problems naming things. It's completely unedited. It's just a rough draft. I threw it up there, so if anybody wants to read it, go read that. Let's see. John will be back next week. Oh, I know what I want to do. This week... And one of your Ink Punk people is going to like this, Jayme, Mr. Andy.
Yes.
For the next week, the 29th through whatever is in April, April 5th. So Tuesday to Tuesday, 29th through the 5th. On our Cafe Press site, I am going to be selling a limited edition Booze Nerd t-shirt.
Awesome.
And it is it's a new Booze Nerd logo that I've created. It's a neon looking logo. It's going to be in a black shirt, and it's going to say Booze Nerd, and it looks really cool and limited edition. So you're going to have that for 1 week only, and then I'm going to take it down. So if you want a Booze Nerd shirt, now's your chance to get
it. And
Awesome.
If I see someone wearing said Booze Nerd shirt at World Fantasy, World Horror, I may very well invite you to sit down and tell us your favorite drinks, because we're always looking for some new ones. So come prepared.
There you go. Because
we will kidnap you.
Next week, John, I believe, will be back. And we were going to have Stephen and Andy Searce, S-E-A-R-C-E, on chatting about some stuff. So anything else you can think of that we need to tell people before I let you go, Jane?
Not that I can think of.
What did you think of the super secret underground lair?
If I say that it's wonderful, do I get to escape with my life?
See, I've got this whole Bond thing going now. It's like, no, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Well, see, either you let me go or I kind of destroy the place cheerfully and happily and singing
a la James
tunes.
Bond. A la James Bond, yeah.
Yeah, while bluebirds flutter about my shoulders. Gotcha. It's really your choice.
So what I'm going to say now is cue the Streets of Bakersfield.
I hate you.
Bye, everybody. Thanks, Jame. We love you. Thanks for coming on. You rock. See you on Twitter.
You will.
I'm not used to John not being here. I have to do everything.
Oh, no.
Jame, is Broken Time Blues going to be available on just like in bookstores, or is it only going to be special order or like Amazon?
Special order on Amazon for now. Trying to find me something better here on the
streets of Bakersfield. Here's something that I've noticed, and you can take this with a grain of sand if you want. We had Harry Turtledove. Sand, salt, who cares? Ever walk the streets of Bakersfield? I'm ATFMB, by the way. I don't know if you are aware of that. I do follow you everywhere.
Okay.
Oh, we left him speechless. Wow. Spent some time in
San Francisco. I'm sorry. Lived through this drunk man in my jail cell. I
left him my watch and my old house key. Well, you know, I hate, you know, I never know if someone's sitting there going, God, I really got to go. I wish these people would just shut up so I can leave. Or if they're just going, you know, gosh, this is kind of a fun conversation, and I kind of want to hang out for a little bit longer. You know, I never know. Hey, you don't know me, but you don't like me. You say you care less how I feel. But how many of you that sit and judge me ever walk the streets of Bakersfield?